Hey guys, we're Trees Reach. My name's Dylan.
I'm Riley.
And I'm Luke.
This is our first episode of a sort of podcast type art form where we are going to go through every song in our discography in chronological order and go somewhat in-depth about it. We were actually going to be in the studio today working on our next recording project, but as you all know, coronavirus is out and about, and so that has been postponed as our studio has closed. But we've wanted to do this podcast for a while, so we figure we'll take the opportunity now. Is there anything you guys want to say before we get started?
We're going to be starting talking with the first song on the album, Glass Cages. And if you're not familiar with it, I encourage you to go listen to it. It's on whatever streaming service you listen to. And it's also on YouTube or on our website, treesreach.com, if you don't have any streaming apps.
That is true. So yeah, in 2018, we released our debut album, Some Night You Will Hear Me Crowing. It's a two-disc.
You said he?
Yep. And it's a two-disc album with 23 songs. So if we're going to talk about Glass Cages, I think we need to start a little bit with the history of the album in general. Because for those of you who may not know us personally, this will be news to you. This album took years and years and years to record, but I would say that most of what you're hearing on the final product was finished in maybe about a two-year time span or so. But Riley and I did a whole version of this album with a different drummer. It was called a different thing. It was the same basic story with a lot of shared songs, but that drummer eventually quit the band. Luke joined the band. Yeah. We decided we still wanted to release the album, but we didn't want to release something that was out of date before we even finished it. And so we thought a lot about it, and kind of to our chagrin decided, I think we need to re-record all the drum parts, which is actually something that Luke had suggested to just kind of bring it up to speed.
Was that before? So we started recording, we recorded two songs, drum parts, like while we were still initially thinking about keeping the old ones, right? At what point did we decide that we were just going to can the whole thing? Because we were just initially going to just do, like, keep those two tracks that I recorded on.
What it was is, there was one recording of one song that all around was particularly bad. So we wanted to re-record the whole thing. I think it was Rain. We wanted to re-record the whole song from the ground up. And so we had Luke drumming just on Rain, and we reimagined the song from what it was originally because we just weren't happy with it. After that, I think what you're thinking of is in our music room, just in this basement, we recorded Self-Absorbed Life and Lover Lover or something like that.
Just like a test recording?
Just a test recording with Luke on drums. We took out the old drum track. There were no click tracks or anything for whatever reason that we had originally recorded with. So he was just feeling the rhythm of our song. But even with that, with him drumming over us playing to a different drummer, it seemed to just kind of freshen up the sound for us. And that was the moment where I think we decided, yeah, we better.
Yeah, it was late 2016.
Yeah. So with that, we realized, because at this point we had been sitting with a lot of these songs for years already. And so we started thinking about, gosh, is this an opportunity to change other things about the album that we never liked? So I remember one night, do you remember when we were standing in the Therms in Riley's kitchen night? So tell them a little bit about how this came about.
Yeah, so the original version of the album had a song starting off the album called Repeat. Riley, do we have a little sample available?
We do have it pulled up.
It's weird that we happen to have a sample.
Wow,
pulled up. It's so weird.
Wow. Yeah, so this song was the opener for the album all the way up until that point. And we actually had been playing it live quite a bit as part of our live set. So some of you may have heard it, but you probably never heard the recording, which has a lot of character. I'll say that. So we're gonna play. We're gonna play you like maybe a minute of it, just a little tease, and we might talk about it in a later episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, this is for Pete.
Again, the original opener for what became Some Night You Will Hear Me Crowing.
Same song comes around. The same stars push it down. Push it to the ground.
Those drums actually sound pretty good. Like you guys,
they were resampled.
So the drums you were hearing was our old drummer David, and we, like I said, recorded a whole version of the album with him. And in this song in particular, they were resampled for some reason. Just in this song, I don't remember why we didn't resample them for
and
the whole thing.
What resampling means is that it's the same drum performance, but instead of the actual audio that was recorded, you replace every single drum hit with a like library of drum sounds, so if you didn't record it super accurately, you can make it sound like it was like a
recorded Abbey Road, like a
better drum set.
So continue the story, Luke. So this is the context. We're thinking about this song opening an album we've been sitting with for a while.
Yeah, and so it had been some time into me officially joining the band. Was this before or after we decided I was gonna this was before we decided we were going to re-record drums. Is that right?
I think it had to have been after, because it wouldn't have been an option to re-record a song without you drumming on it.
Okay.
So I think we had decided that you were going to be the new drummer for the album.
Okay. And so I brought it up to Dylan. We were in the Therms kitchen, and I can vividly place it now. The lights were off for some reason. I think we were about to leave or something.
Yeah, it was definitely a like last point of the night
conversation. Yeah. And I like to bring up talking points at very bad opportunities, usually when it's like late at night, when it's time for people to go home. So I brought this up to Dylan. I was like, what if Repeat was not the opener? I asked that. I think the main reason was, my heart was kind of steering away from it. Especially as the album was, I think it was starting to take on a little bit of a different form at this point. And it didn't feel, I think my main concern was that it didn't feel like it set the album up for, well, one, success, two, sonically. Mm-hmm. There weren't really any other songs that matched the kind of character that Repeat has, maybe like Seven Stories at its highest point, but it kind of just stood alone by itself as an exclamation point at the beginning of this now new album the new formation of this record.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, Dill, what would you think if that song wasn't on the album essentially?
Well, and I remember we had a response to it that was kind of like, I mean, we liked the song.
Yeah.
It was really cool. Yeah. And even listening to it now, it's like there's definitely stuff wrong with it. We obviously didn't record with a click track, and so the tempo is all over the place, and our vocals are not up to par.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. But we liked the guitar solo. We thought we started the song about maybe like a minute in, but there's this whole intro with like a piano, and then it goes a cappella, and it like changes keys kind of like every couple chords, and so it was like a pretty interesting song. But I think I had kind of been feeling what you said, and I wasn't thinking of it as an option to write a new opener. I was like, we have what we have, like, yeah, okay, like that's cool.
Yeah, we were just there were so many things about the album that we were just like, well, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it hadn't even occurred to us to write a new one.
Because this, like, had you decided at this point to rewrite the lyrics for most of the songs, or do you remember? Because that could have added to, like, the, oh my gosh, this is a lot.
Yeah. I don't remember at what point my kind of lyrical second take of the album occurred.
Okay.
But it was all around the same time, because... Yeah. It all started with you deciding, or with us deciding that we wanted you to drum on the album. And in that mix was like, well, what if we took out this song and replaced it with something else? Or what if we rewrote the lyrics to this? It was a very unique opportunity to basically have an album that we had worked on for 3 years, listen to it, decide what we didn't like about it, and then redo it.
Yeah.
So it was dumb in a lot of ways, but kind of cool in a lot of other ways.
Yeah.
I do remember standing in Riley's parents' kitchen. And as we're talking about this, I said, okay, guys, I want to go home. I'm starting to get ideas for a new opening track. And I went home and played that first just 3-chord descending melodic phrase of Oh, Hail the Day Again. A lot of it came together pretty quick over a couple days. And then I didn't work on it for like a couple months. And the bridge was definitely what I got hung up on lyrically and musically. But I remember recording a demo of what I had and showing it to you and our friend Travis when we were on our way to play it, like a camp thing in February.
Were we in the King Ranch?
We were in the King Ranch.
Travis.
And I was like, guys, I have this new opener for the album that I've been working on. And I think it's like really moody and really cool. And you had just showed me,
Watertown
by Frank Sinatra,
which is a great album.
And there's a song called, is it Peter and John, Peter and Michael? Michael and Peter. And I haven't listened to it since you showed it to me. So Riley had showed me this Frank Sinatra song. I thought it was so cool. And I had heard it once. And that like soundscape was kind of in my mind. So I'm like, I want to write something like that to start off our album. That would be so cool. And I'm also thinking about bands I love, like Dawes or Fronty Ruckus, have like a slow open to their whole discography. We were thinking like first album, so it needs to hit hard, it needs to be like really cool and proggy or whatever. But I kind of took a 180 and said, what if it's like a really nuanced, quiet start and let the album kind of turn into a scream? And so that was the influence behind the sort of the overall mood of the song. And then, of course, lyrically, like, I think that rewriting an opening track, especially with... It's also worth noting that Glass Cages was one of the last songs we wrote for this album. And so we have this whole story laid out before us, and now there's an opportunity to kind of write a song that can really foreshadow or prophesy the rest of the album, since we have a really good idea of what it's going to be. So that was fun to have that opportunity to work with it.
So, Dil, when you were writing this song, what was the mood that, I mean, coming from Repeat, like this bombastic thing, into a slower, maybe more methodical approach, what was the mood that you wanted to encapsulate to set up the album?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think like emotional numbness is a big one that I wanted to get at, because I saw that that's where the character was at for the rest of the story, and where Repeat failed lyrically was by expressing a sense of unrest with how the world around him is. Whereas this just wanted to be more like a man, like, how did I get here? Like, who even am I? And so musically I wanted it to obviously be melancholy, with lots of just kind of like muted colors and blue and dark greens, and have a lot of, even if you think about the rhythm, once the drums come in, and maybe we'll listen to it in a second here, but you think about just like the bass and the guitar and the kick drum all just like boom, ka, boom, ka. It's just so like heavy and kind of lazy. But then musically it gets really soupy, as the narrator is singing about, like, how do I measure these changes that I've been through when they've left behind no evidence? And at that bridge portion of the song, it goes from the verses being relatively harmonically simple to hitting almost every chord on the keyboard. We actually went through this. Riley was, as he was learning the song, he pointed out to me that the song contains every single, how'd you put it? Like root?
It contains a chord with every single root note in it.
Yeah.
And the 12 tones.
Except for A flat. Because I hate A flat. I'm just kidding. But,
so the point is, it's a really chord heavy song.
It's a really chord heavy song. It gets really hairy, and I liked then coming out back sort of into relative peace, ending in G, which takes you into self absorbed life to kind of like wake the mood up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Which ending in G is interesting because the song starts in the key of E. And ending a song in a different key than you start it is an interesting composing technique that Dylan made very good use of on this song, I would say.
Thank you.
Because a lot of times you won't pick up on it the first few times you listen to it, but you'll feel at the end of the song like, this is the same melody, but something's different. Still Crazy After All These Years by Paul Simon does the same thing, where it ends in a higher key, I think a fourth up, maybe.
Do we have to credit him now after dropping a song?
Probably.
Pay royalties.
I was planning on just Venmoing him anyway.
Okay.
Okay.
I do every
probably
day.
Do that now.
Let me set that up actually. Really quick. Awfully.
Do you mention it that often?
No, I just want Paul Simon to thrive.
Yeah, got you. True. True.
Okay.
Anyway. Yeah. So one interesting thing I think of about this song is we had studio recording time scheduled for Luke to record drums. And at this point, I had not finished writing the song. I think specifically I hadn't finished writing the bridge. But Luke and I needed to rehearse the drum parts. And so we had to sit down and I basically said, okay, Luke, I think it's going to take this many measures to get through the bridge. And I approximate that this is what the dynamic is going to be. So I think I was just playing some scratch chords, like maybe it'll go here.
Mm.
And but then you were drumming along to a song that didn't exist.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Did we do that twice? There was...
Yeah, we also did it with Fog.
Yeah.
Fog wasn't finished when
That's
you recorded
right.
the drums.
Yeah.
In the studio.
So the studio take of that you hear on Glass Cages of Luke playing the drums, the song wasn't finished yet. He was guessing it.
I was going in blind.
That's right. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about that. What was it like recording in that studio, doing the drums, mixing the song?
Yeah, so Riley will talk more about this, but we only recorded drums in the studio. Everything else was home recorded. But recording drums was fun. That was the first time I'd ever been in a studio to record drums.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot to learn. I don't think Riley told us that was not the first song that we recorded in the studio. I don't remember which one it was. Self-Absorbed Life or something like that.
Oh yeah. I think we started with Self-Absorbed Life.
Yeah. So, yeah, repeat. I remember kind of being excited about recording that portion of the song that hadn't fully been written yet.
You mean Glass Cages?
Sorry, yeah. Sorry,
yeah.
Whoops.
Take two.
I remember being excited about hitting that portion of Glass Cages that hadn't been created yet. But after listening to it, now there's a few things that I would have been like, okay, I would have done a different accent here,
sure.
Or played a little bit harder there, like dynamics changed and stuff like that. But yeah, this song was, I remember it was kind of difficult just getting the right feel for the drums. I should have thought about this before I started talking about
it. Cut
it. Yeah, that's fine. Because I don't remember if it was one of those that we figured out right away that the halftime like worked, or if it was after some trial and error. But then I remember when I like did the double time switch To how do I measure these changes? That felt right. And then switching back and forth from halftime to, or the time to double time, the time, the time to double time.
Do you want to play it a little
yeah.
bit to show them?
Yeah, that part.
Yeah,
it's the very beginning.
After the drums come in.
Yeah. So this is the halftime.
Yeah. And instead of hi-hat, I'm using a brush on the snare drum to keep the chord notes.
It's great texture.
Yeah. And then
right there.
Time.
Yeah. So it's basically like switching between 6/8 and 3/4. So
yeah.
1 and 2 and 2 1 2 3 1 2 3 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great way to pick up the momentum.
Yeah, and then it switches back to the 6/8 once it at the end of kind of the phrase, right before we do the ooze.
Oh yeah.
Just to kind of really emphasize the power of that. Those lyrics and that musical moment. Yeah.
The lyrics being, ooh.
Well, right before that.
Oh, it switches before?
Yeah, right, yeah, it switches before, and then it goes back to the 3/4 for
oh,
the ooze part.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, yeah guys. Wow. I thought about this.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Dude. I'm a drummer.
Luke. Okay.
It's okay, Luke.
Luke, I'm not mad.
I play
the only one who's mad right now.
I'm not even mad. I just play the drums.
You seem mad.
I'm going to make a t-shirt that says that.
So please purchase that on our site.
Yeah.
It's
www.treesearch.org.
100% of the funds go to me.
No, none
of
this is true.
He needs it.
They're both lying.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so a good segue from talking about drums, talking about the recording process would be today we made a discovery. So both Dylan and I have noticed this creaking noise at the beginning of the song. I don't know if you Luke play right when the drums come in, but there's a creak like between the kick drum hits, and I thought it was the kick drum pedal or something. It's like kind of creaking, but it sounds like wooden. Play it again. After the snare. There's like a little, there's a little creaking after the snare. And so I hadn't pulled up the original project file of this song since we mixed it. And today I got it out for this podcast. And I was like, great, I'll go in and I'll hear that creaking noise in the drums and I'll have a better idea of what it is. And it's not there. And so I'm like, oh, it must be in the acoustic guitar, you know. And I sold the acoustic guitar, and it's not there.
What
and
the?
I don't
where is it?
Know where this creaky
wait,
comes
what?
From. But it makes it like, it sounds like we're like in a log cabin or something, and like the floorboards are creaking as the drums are playing.
Uh-huh.
It sounds really cool, and it's something I didn't notice until after we had mixed the song.
But you still
I
don't,
just
know,
don't
where
know where it comes from.
You still have no idea where it's from.
I don't, like, I can solo the drums here. For,
wait,
yeah.
Do these stems have the effects on them?
No. But I don't know what effect would be causing that.
Right, it's not like there's a delay on it.
There's like, all there is a bit of reverb on the drums, and the reverb would not behave that way. Here's how the drums sound when they first come in.
Yeah, there's nothing after that snare.
And if you listen to the guitar in the same spot, because it's just guitar, piano, and drums there.
There's no piano.
Oh.
I mean guitar, vocals, and drums, what I meant to say. But here's what the guitar is doing. Wrong. No creaking. None to speak of. So that's just an interesting thing. If we got any paranormal investigators out there that were listening to
please.
Our music, if you could kind of give me the rundown of what you think about that.
We've also spotted a lot of orbs in this project file. Not sure what let that's us know all in the about. Comments what you think that's all about.
Dylan, what are orbs? Let's solve this.
Orbs
right
are
now.
Orbs are small manifestations of spirit energy that float through the air, pretending to be a dust particle or an insect. So much so that they're indecipherable from dust particles or insects, but they're spiritual.
Well, orb theory from Dylan Raritan.
Mm, orb theory. Wow.
When does your YouTube channel come out, dude?
It's a secret.
Okay.
That's a really good idea.
I have some ideas to share with you about that.
Okay. Wow.
This is not the camera.
Stay tuned.
Okay. So I'll talk a little bit more about the recording and mixing process, because that's kind of my bag of tricks in the band. So for this song, it was a brand new song. It was like the last song written for the album, we have talked about. And so what was cool about arranging this song was that it was written on piano by Dylan, and we're like, but we don't want it to be a piano song, because the next two songs are piano songs. Next three songs are piano songs, really. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we want the album to start like a guitar-ish driven thing. And so I had the fun task of getting drums and the bass and the organ. And it was up to me to fill out the rest of the song with guitar. So I don't know if I want to talk about arranging first or mixing.
Arranging.
I'll talk about arranging. So, I think I don't know if I got a demo from you that was on piano, or if I just learned it from you.
I think
you.
I just taught it to you.
Yeah. So, I've got the guitar here, and I'm not sure if it's
weird.
This one or my, personal classical guitar that I used. I think it was mine, but we used a classical guitar to emulate the sound of the harp from that Frank Sinatra song that Dylan was talking about, I think is what we were going for. So I'll play the second verse of the song to kind of show you how I tried to use the classical guitar in a way that would emulate how a piano might play, as opposed to how a guitar would traditionally do it. So the verse goes like this. Up into the bridge.
Wow.
Great
part, Rick.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I got to attribute that to the months I spent taking classical guitar lessons from Tom Nothnagel. Thanks, Tom.
Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Tom.
And so the other elements of the song are electric guitar, and organ, and other than bass, drums, and vocals, that's all that's going on here. But when I listen to this song, it kind of sounds like there's a lot more going on. I think one of the magics of studio work is that when you layer things and add reverbs and blend all the things together, and if you're successful at it, or reasonably successful, it can sound like a greater than the sum of its parts. And I think that we did achieve some of that in this song, and I still love listening to the mix of this song. Why don't we listen to the very end, because that's my favorite part.
The recording,
yeah, let's play
the ooze.
We layered ooze as we did a lot on this album, I think it was one of the last things we recorded, was like adding these ooze to all these songs.
Oh, was it?
I seem to remember, especially like on Mist and Fog, like being like we were in the studio recording, and like we'd be back here the nights in between trying to finish up piecing all these things together.
Yeah.
But these ooze in this song were very difficult to sing. And if you listen, which we won't, but if you were here earlier, when we listened to the raw recording without like reverb to help it along, it's not great. It's not bad.
I wouldn't say it's super in tune.
It's not great.
Yeah. I think we should give them a little sample. I think we should give them a little taste.
Maybe we just kind of leave our pride at the door.
Maybe we can do that.
That's fine.
And then you can hear the difference.
This is three years ago. We have changed so much. No. I thought the camera was over here for a second, and so I looked up and I was looking at the TV.
Okay, well, yeah, so this is a bit of those ooze.
Just so you know, this is the old us. This is not us.
We were different people back then.
We have completely changed.
No, it's not that bad.
Like, I don't know about you guys. That's not me. Like, I have changed so much.
You have, Luke.
Luke, I love you so much. I just want you to know that.
So, we are listening to Right Before the Ooze?
Yeah, just put us in.
Yeah. Whoa.
Perfect.
Good timing.
So, once you mix it in with a band, I said so.
You said so, yeah, yeah.
I said so, I see what you did there. My take on it is that when you have slightly out of tune harmonies from three boys who can sing but totally chose not to, and then you mix that in, with a full band, it just translates to character.
It's rock and roll.
Till a certain point.
It's rock
and roll. You can certainly sing off key and you notice that people are singing off key, but that's an interesting element of recording.
One last thing I want to point out is something that I was really proud of at the time. I still think is pretty cool, but I just want to highlight this. In the bridge, which is the part that starts, how do I measure these changes? I did this thing where I was trying to emulate the sound of a harp glissando, and so I played, sweep-picked my classical guitar and panned it across the stereo spectrum to kind of approximate that effect. And so I'm going to play it here. I'm not sure you'll be able to hear the panning effect through the phone or through the whatever mic we're using, but this is how that sounds. And so it's sort of layered back there, and I think that's one of the little touches that I was really happy with how it added.
You should absolutely be happy with that.
Yeah, that's a great effect.
Wait,
a little back from
it. Here we go.
It's particularly fun to listen to on a good pair of headphones.
Mm-hmm.
I think in general, this album is best listened to on headphones.
This is a true statement.
If you want my recommendation.
If you had to personify that sound, what is that? Each one of us.
A bunch of birds flying out of cages.
Yeah.
You're talking about like the harp sound?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to me it's like birds fluttering by. Mm. Like small little white birds.
How do I envision it? I envision it living above the rest of the song. Like if I'm visualizing the song, it's up here and it's kind of shaped like that, and I think I imagine it as like glass falling or something like that.
Maybe like,
and it's very white and silvery
cage,
like from a
when we were listening to just the stems, it felt just like little smooches like going across, like if my ears were separated from my head.
That's because I was giving you little smooches
around
when we were doing
around an orb. Your ears are on an orb.
Like,
imagine like a face. Like your ears are just on a spirit orb. And there's just little like smooches just going all around your face from ear to ear.
Can we call this podcast Smooches on a Spirit Orb?
Smooches. Nice.
Anyway.
I think we can.
What else do we want to talk about? Riley, what was mixing this song like?
Mixing, this was the first song that we mixed. And I remember...
Mm. Was it because it's the first song on the album? Wait, are you sure?
Sun Chasers
wasn't the first one?
Nope. Sun Chasers was actually pretty far along. Keller was in the studio with us.
Remember that, Keller? I know Keller.
Keller remembers.
He's got it. He's
Keller's our only viewer right now for this first episode. We'll probably peak around episode 5 and then it'll just be back to Keller.
Yeah. This was the first song. And we... I remember listening to the rough mixes we had been doing. Because to give some context, we were mixing this with our friend Tim King at G-Mix Studio.
Love you, Tim.
Which is in the Chair Building. And we loved him so dearly.
I think I winked with both my eyes.
Tim is a great guy with great memes.
Yeah.
Great get a lot of good memes from
good
Tim.
Good memes, better heart.
True.
Nice.
So we were mixing with Tim at this place called G-Mix. And we were... What am I trying to say? I remember listening to the first rough mix, like driving back here, and like not really being crazy about it, and I couldn't tell why. We were like, "Something doesn't sound right." I think it was just that we didn't have the EMT reverb set to stereo.
Oh,
it honestly might have been that.
It was set to stun.
No, there was more to it than that. I think we had to do some more detailed EQ to the guitars, to the acoustic guitars.
I remember it being hard to get the vocal a good volume throughout, too.
Yeah.
Because the band changes dynamics so dramatically through the song that to keep the vocal audible without it just being obvious that it was being turned up or turned down was tough.
The dynamic movements were really tricky. And, and getting them to sit well and getting things not to crowd each other in the mix... when I say EQ, that stands for equalize, it's short for equalize, and it's where you're taking different frequency spectrums of the instrument and either cutting them out or boosting them in different shapes and ways in order to alter the makeup of the sound, and you have to do a lot of that in a mix. If I were to play you the dry mix with no equalizers that I have here, it would sound very bad. So, I remember that in the next few sessions that we had mixing the song, it got like exponentially better, and my confidence in how we were going to be able to actually achieve the mix that we wanted definitely increased.
Mm. Right on.
Looking back on these songs, what would you change for the better or for the worse?
How would I make it worse?
Yeah, how would you make it worse?
No, I mean, I think... What things are you totally happy with?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, really good question. That's better. That's more balanced. I am still, at this point, like 2 years out, listening back to this song, I'm still really happy, especially with how that second verse sounds when the drums and the guitar come in. I think it totally has that heavy-footed kind of mood. Of just everything kind of falling into its place, and it's really satisfying to listen to. I also like that the very first thing you hear on the album is like a lyric starting with like a really soft organ chord.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only things I would do different are just your basic things that come with time. Like there's some performance choices maybe I would change, and even just listening to something from 2 years ago, I can tell ways in which now I'm a better singer. So it'd be kind of nice to hear that, but that's just mm-hmm. the fate of any recorded piece of work, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm really happy with it.
Cool. Yeah. I think, I don't have a lot of notes on this song as far as things that I'm not crazy about. I think that, this is one of the songs where everything came together, and I'm really happy. I'm still happy with most of the parts that I wrote. I think maybe I would have tuned the guitar a little bit more often. there's like maybe a few, or like, and it might even just be the intonation of the guitar that like was off in some parts. But I think that the song has a lot of magic, and I wouldn't change much at all.
I think in my opinion, the song, it's supposed to be kind of sleepy, but I would like to give it a little more energy. I don't know how we would do that. I think it would come down to just like the way that we mixed the drums, the way that we mixed certain things. I think it just lacks a little bit of a drive that I want
to. It feels a little bit like it's on Benadryl.
Yes. Yeah.
I think the two ways I would fix that if we were to do it again is A, you know what the song is going to be like, mm-hmm. and so that you can like drum to it with more like vivaciousness.
Yeah.
And then in my vocal, I think that there could have been a little bit more dynamic. The vocal's a little sloshy. I think that is one of the vocal things I would do differently now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I feel that.
Yeah. But otherwise...
Yeah.
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 Do you feel the mood that you wanted to encapsulate for this song, do you feel like you... like we obtained it?
I think in general, absolutely.
Cool.
I think there's always little details that could have been different, but I hear this song and think, dang, like, this is a pretty, like, different opener.
Yeah.
Unexpected opener.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool because I have a lot of people, I have a lot of friends. believe me. I've had such a mixed take on this song of people telling me that, like, you guys should have started off with something heavier, and people saying, I never want that song to end. Because it just feels so good to open up an album like that.
Nobody has ever told me anything about this song.
Really?
Yeah. I haven't heard anyone's critique of this song. Literally positive or negative.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
Yeah.
Well.
Do you ask people a lot? Do you go up to people like, hey,
what do you guys think of repeat? This is people, so the...
I know.
Hey, that was just
cool.
Guys, yeah. Stop fighting. Mm. No, I think that I can't remember who specifically would have said this, but I think I've gotten people like, "Oh, that was interesting that you started off with a slow song," which is code for you shouldn't have started off with a slow song. I've only had one guy. It was an old manager tell me like, "Yeah, you shouldn't have started off with that song," and I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I appreciate your honesty, but you're wrong. Like,
you know who you are."
Yeah, you know who you are.
Yeah, we're coming for you. Next project. You specifically. We're coming for you.
Anyway, that's all I got about Glass Cages.
Yeah. Well, this has been the First Trees Reach podcast.
Thanks for tuning in. Tune in next week for Self-Absorbed Life,
our most streamed song on Spotify.
Hey!
But still, I am pulled along by the passing years, through depths